On this episode of Fast Forward Radio.
I knew that I had to get some sort of street cred, right? And have something that I could lean on and say, look, I'm one of you guys. So the first thing I did is I did this little undercover boss.
Boss? Okay, like a TV show?
Not the TV show, but similar to the TV show. And it was really interesting to see the way people really transformed and from people on the street to our service agents. And really all it took was for us to bring the humanity out of them. It didn't take a lot of specialized training or soft skills, although that is important in some cases. But people are people. And at the end of the day, most people are good, I think.
Fast Forward Radio is a series that showcases how leading companies are applying design thinking strategies to accelerate digital innovation. Each episode, we have conversations with design thinking leaders to uncover their secrets for driving innovation each and every day.
I'd like to welcome our guest, Shane Bray, CXO, Chief Experience Officer with Willis Towers Watson, one of the leading healthcare providers in the country. First, welcome to the show, Shane.
Thank you.
And so one of the reasons we wanted to bring Shane on and have a conversation with him is really Shane's background as a chief customer experience officer has led him down some very interesting and unexpected paths. And I think, you know, your experience of around empathy is something that fascinates me, right? As a design thinker, empathy is such a critical tool in the toolbox. And I shouldn't even say tool because it's not like you pull empathy out here and then you put it back. It's really more a practice, right? And a value that should be embraced to really drive the customer experience and improve the customer experience. And so maybe just to start up, maybe share with our audience, our listeners, more about your background, what you do, and really where you got your experience from, kind of quickly.
Yeah, so I have a bit of an interesting background. I'm both a registered nurse and a software engineer. I've done each for about 12 years or more. And so kind of taking that patient care mindset of taking care of people and transitioning that over into a technology set where you still exercise that empathy of understanding how you can help people and what people are coming to you for, I think is a pretty natural transition. And I think you hit on it right, that empathy isn't necessarily a tool, but it's sort of an attribute that has to be a constant in your efforts and in the culture that you set. It's very easy to build cool things that don't help people, but that empathy really drives building meaningful software solutions and engagements.
That's a very interesting combination of nurse and technologists, right? Yeah. So my mom was a nurse, actually my mom and my stepmom. I don't know what was going on with my dad, but somehow he knew nurses were good people. So, but that's an interesting combination because as a nurse, there's a natural sense of needing to empathize, right? Or building empathy. But then technologists, it's almost the opposite, right? A lot of times technologists just don't have that empathy muscle. And so I'm curious to hear from your standpoint, like, how do you see teams beginning to build that muscle? And what's been your experience of deepening your own empathy in your role at Willis Towers Watson?
So I'll start with the last piece first of how I've been able to shift my thinking within the company. I started with a company as in a technical role as a business intelligence developer, and then moved from there into product development, eventually into more customer technology facing roles. And that sort of evolved into a customer, into the position I'm in now. When I was moved into this role, it was a bit of a surprise to me. I had spent several years petitioning for us to be more customer-centric, really focus on the customer in terms of our software. And so petitioning leadership, hey, we need a guy to do this. And it took us several years, and they finally said, all right, you're the guy. And so, like I said, it was a bit of a surprise. And there was a I was a little bit nervous about the transition, moving from a technology position into what is now a business position. You know, it's like, what's this technologist know about customer service? What does he know about operations? What does he know about empathy? And those are all really good questions. Technology mindset and a customer service mindset are completely different. So I knew that I had to get some sort of street cred, right? And have something that I could lean on and say, look, I'm one of you guys. So the first thing I did is I did this little undercover boss.
Undercover boss? Okay, like a TV show?
Not the TV show, but similar to the TV show. Okay. Where I traveled to one of our call centers. It was actually our largest call center that I hadn't frequently gone to. And grew out the beard. The beard stayed, by the way.
So the beard wasn't a disguise. It actually was real.
Okay. Well, I had no beard and I grew it, and I just like, man, that I think I'm gonna keep that. So that ended up kind of being a relic of my experience. It's my souvenir.
Souvenir from Undercover Boss.
Yeah. So the only person that knew I was there was the director of training. HR didn't know I was there, which presented some interesting problems. I was almost fired because I didn't want to provide my I-9 that I had already done 13 years ago. But as I walked into the building, I was a new hire. Nobody knew who I was. And so, I went from being someone who had been with a company and senior leadership to being a brand new hire. And that shift just in atmosphere was pretty noticeable. And then I joined our customer service training, which lasts 3 weeks, because we do a lot of training on the technicalities of healthcare insurance and dealing with folks in an older demographic and their emotions. And I have to tell you that joining that course was probably the single best thing I've done in 26 years.
Really, sitting on the new hire course like that, what was the course?
So it was teaching new employees to the company how to service our customers, how to use our technology, and how to talk with customers who were in the situation of being transitioned from healthcare, and a lot of them are just now retiring. So it's a delicate time, and it was really interesting to see the way people really transformed, and from people on the street to our service agents. And really, all it took was for us to bring the humanity out of them. It didn't take a lot of specialized training or soft skills, although that is important in some cases. But people are people, and at the end of the day, most people are good, I think.
So what were some of the things that you got out of the course or going through that experience? What were some of the key things that you got out that helped deepen your level of empathy?
So this was really interesting. I'd spent the previous decade or more creating tool sets for our agents and our customers to use to facilitate enrollment and all of those things that they need to know. And my mindset in a lot of that way was, we have to do as much as we can for our agents so they don't screw it up. Technology has to do. We really have to use technology to ensure the customer experience is consistent, is good. And there's some merit to that. But what I learned is the people in that room, kind of like I said, people are people. You know that most of them are good. They don't need you to tell them how to be good people. They don't need the technology to direct their empathy and emotions, because for most of us, we have it, and it comes out naturally. So in a lot of cases, moving from technology into the more human component, it was a real wake-up call for me that I don't have to tell people using through technology how to treat people. They're going to do a good job of that on their own.
To a certain extent, it sounds like what you realize, the aha moment might have been around, okay, people are good. So, you know, I can actually build the technology to support them doing what they need to do. But there's an assumption that, you know, that didn't necessarily hold true. That assumption is the technology has to guide people right to do the right thing, as opposed to people innately already come to the position with the right kind of empathy that's needed, right?
Yes.
So to a certain extent, you know, I wonder, did you find that technology could get in the way once you were able to see how the agents were working, right? And how they were interacting?
Yeah, I definitely did see that some of the technical workflows and things that we developed almost disrupted natural dialogues. And, you know, they're like, would get a cue off of a person's needs or emotions. And, oh, but hang on, I've got to read this screen or something to that effect.
It's interesting because as a technologist, I think, you know, when I first started looking at design thinking and I was interviewing these different design companies and they kept using the term empathy, and I kept thinking to myself, like, I'm empathetic, right? Like, I have empathy for people. And one of the designers was saying, well, it's not about whether you have empathy. It's where is the empathy directed, right?
Yeah.
It made me think about, you know, oh, yeah, okay, when I built systems or led solution development, the system, I had more empathy with the system than with the people that were using the system, right? Yeah. And yeah. So if you ask me about the system, like, oh, you want to change or give feedback on the solution, you know, my empathy was like, hey, don't touch my solution, right? I built this. This is mine. I have more empathy with the solution than with the actual people that we're using or the end customers. And so it's, you know, as technologists, I think there's a natural inclination to think, you know, hey, we're smarter than the people that are going to be using the system. Right. And so we're building, assuming they're not really not smart. That sounded pretty bad. But the idea is, you know, I am a technologist, so I know the best way to do this. Right.
Well, yeah. I think the way you said it is accurate a lot of times. You know, the sort of intelligence that comes with being able to design complex solutions brings some ego. And that's just the way. That's
just a little bit of ego.
And so, yeah, and that's part of dealing with technologists versus people that work with customers. I can't think of a lot of technologists I would ever want to talk to a customer because they're so logic driven and they're so black and white, and you know everything is based in fact. And that's not the way people are. And you mentioned empathy, and I think so there's empathy is based on understanding. I think we all have empathy. You know, we'll see, you know, a lost dog or something like that. And that, you know, immediately kind of makes us want to do good things, right? But I think empathy is based on understanding. And the thing that the folks in the business side have that are working with customers every day is a real understanding of what those folks are saying, what those folks are experiencing. And so empathy is driven from understanding those things. And so I think that's the key, is bringing that understanding of what's happening within the customers' lives and their feelings, and bringing that understanding over into a way that technologists can digest that and make sense to them, give them understanding. And then understanding, I think, is key to empathy. They will be empathetic when they see that the way that they're working with the technology doesn't make sense, or APIs are failing, or whatever it is that's creating pain. What the way it manifests to the customer is, I can't do what I need to do right now. I don't know my balance is. I don't know how my finances are going to work. And so understanding that perspective, I think, is really key to having real empathy.
And I think this is a big, becoming a big area of, you know, how do you get more empathy into IT teams, right? Because, you know, if you look at it, I just recently had a conversation with an executive where one of his goals, a CIO, one of his goals is to hire more developers with high EQ, you know, and I was like, okay, how are you going through that? I'm curious, because if you crack the code, let me know, right? And, you know, EQ, emotional intelligence, that's a big area where, you know, like we were just talking, a lot of technologists end up with very high IQ or logical focus. And I'm curious, like, what's your take on recommendations to build higher levels of empathy or build empathy muscle into technology teams?
So over the years, we've had a constant of technologists asking for to understand the customers better. And we would do things like replay focus groups and things like that to a lesser extent of effectiveness. One of the things that we just started doing is incorporating our verbatims. So the verbatims we get from our customer surveys and things that come back. Technologists live in Slack, or they live in these remote tools. Yeah. And so now we just dump our participant listening into a Slack channel. And so it's just a click away for them to see what customers are saying about their technology, things that have gone wrong. And they're going to tell you, and they're going to tell you how it makes them feel. And when you just take that directly from, hey, the customer said this, it's pretty close to, it's not real time, of course. We've got to extract them from surveys and put them in, but it's something that you see reactions on pretty quickly. And it's also native to the technologists. They're in Slack all day, so it's something that they're ready to digest, and it's been really effective for us.
There's a real-time feedback loop on empathy where they can see, the technologists, the team can see what our customers saying and really react to it, right?
Yeah, and that's really effective, because especially when they're used to someone like myself, you know, coming in, then it just comes off as me always complaining, right? I'm always bitching about, well, the customer said this, the customer said this. And there's a certain probably perception of, you know, did the customer really say that? Or
are you filtering?
Yeah, but when you send them verbatims, you know, I'm just telling you what they said, and that's that.
I know we did, we're one of the customers we're working with. We had a group of technologists that were very focused on a specific scenario, right? And they knew, like, this is how this needs to be built. And, you know, one of the things we were trying to figure out is, do we just battle it out as a representative of the customer, right? And say, well, you know, customers told us that they want it this way, sort of like what you were walking through. And what we decided to do is actually bring the customer, and this is an internal customer, but bring the customer into a session and do an actual role play. So if you think about contact center, we had the agent actually do a role play to answer a call, right? Literally, we did the agent on their mobile phone. Agent answered it like they were taking the call. and we walked through the scenario. And what was amazing was the data lead, data architect, who really was thinking that the data needed to be structured a certain way, when he had a chance to see the agent and how the agent was handling the call, it changed his whole perception of how the data needed to look, right? And instead of it being, we as the, you know, the kind of business strategy group helping this customer, trying to dictate, well, this is what it needs to be, we actually let the agent share their experience directly with the data architect. And he even said later, like, that was the aha moment for me, is actually seeing the agent's perspective and what they're trying to do and the time pressure they're under, right?
Yeah.
So yep, that role play, I hadn't done that quite like that before. Definitely not to move data architects. Sometimes data architects can be, as you probably know, as a BI. They're a different breed. But they, you know, there's things that I'm seeing, like the example you gave, the feedback in Slack, things that you can do to really get that level of empathy up. And the question I've started asking is, you know, how do you operationalize and institutionalize that? Like what you found with Slack, you know, is it, you know, maybe, I don't know if you've seen anything like this, like maybe there's an undercover boss in groups where, you know, parts of the technology team or technology team leadership goes out and really, maybe in a volunteer fashion or some other fashion, really works on the front lines, right? To get that experience. And I, you know, just trying to noodle around on that, like, because I see that as a huge barrier to effective CX, right? And sustainable CX. Getting some of these, the muscle, I like to refer to it, not that I have any real muscles, but I like to refer to it as, you know, building that muscle. And I'm just curious what else you might have seen or ideas you have that you think teams can adopt or embrace to start driving and building a little bit more muscle there.
Yeah, I think that we've done some shadowing where we've had some of our technologists sit down with agents, and that can be effective as so long as there's some authenticity to it. You can't make somebody sit down with an agent and appreciate what's going on. And in some contexts, they'll sit there and they'll point out everything that's going wrong.
That's what there should be a little bit of pre-training.
Right. but it's kind of like when I went into the CSR training, you know, I wanted to understand. I wanted to learn. I wanted everybody in that room to teach me something. And they did. And I think that's why design thinking is so important, because I think that's the perfect forum to bring the technologist and the agents together, give them a problem and say, here's a problem that we need to solve. You guys work together and figure it out. Because then it's less of a passive thing where the technologist is going, let me see what I can learn from you. And they're starting to say, well, you know, what if we did this solution? And they hear from one of the customer service representatives, no, that won't work because of A, B, and C. And so you get that real effective dialogue. And then you really kind of start to build that team around solving problems. And I think we've had some real success with design thinking and getting more authentic engagements, I think. So in any way that you try to engage across business, I think it has to be authentic for it to work.
I see it. What tips do you have? Like if I'm a CXO, you know, and when I say CXO, like I'm CTO, CIO, Chief Experience Officer, what are some tips you have on me going undercover boss mode? Like what did you learn in terms of how to make that work, right? To be that undercover boss. Because it's something that I might do at some point, is just like, you know, grow my beard out, put on a wig, put on glasses, and you know, go undercover. So I'm curious what tips you have from your experience that if others wanted to really go into that mode to learn, right?
Yeah. I think that you have to have an objective when you go in. The objective that I had was, I knew all the tools that because I built most of them or had a hand in building most of them. So I knew the technology. There's a funny story to go along with that. In fact, I'll get it in really quick. So I built one of our drug tools, it's a pretty robust tool. And during the training, they were teaching how to use this drug tool. I failed it.
You failed
it. I failed the test on it. I mean, I architected and built the thing, but I failed it. I wasn't quite moving things over the way that they did. And it was pretty, when my score came up, it said 40% on the screen. And I kind of chuckled a little bit. The trainer was standing right behind me and said, "You think that's funny?" I said, You'll think it's funny one day. But you do have to have a real objective when you go in. And mine was really focused on the ability for us as an organization, not as an agent, but as an organization to understand what our customers are going through. Trying to figure out a way to package that in a way to bring that back to the organization. But again, it has to be authentic. Shortly following the undercover boss piece, one of the other things I did is I went and spent about 2 months visiting hospice, visiting hospitals, long-term care facilities, and just going in and having organic conversations and hearing people talk about things that mattered, things that were difficult, and getting all of that. You have to do it. For me, I wanted to do it outside of the context of the business because I didn't want to scope the conversation around your healthcare, your finances. I just wanted them to talk. And that was incredibly valuable. So I think if you're going to engage in something like an undercover boss, or you're going to do some ethnographic research, then have an objective, be genuine, and be careful not to scope it. Because if you scope it, then you're going to limit what you can learn.
It's interesting you say that, because as you were walking through having an objective, it made me think, like, similar to design thinking, if it is a good practice to have an empathy challenge, like when you're going into an environment, like in design thinking, we have, you know, the design challenge. You know, when you're going into an environment as an undercover boss to learn, does it make sense to have an empathy challenge? But it almost sounds like if you scope it too much like that, you could limit yourself. Is that fair?
Yeah, and I'll kind of go back to something I'd said before, is that I think the goal isn't necessarily empathy, it's understanding. Right.
Understanding, exactly.
Some people are sociopaths, right? And they're
not. Yeah.
but for most of us, when you have a real understanding, empathy is just a natural occurrence.
And that's a really good point, because I think what I'm taking away from this is, Don't over rotate on the term empathy, because then people may look at it as a checkbox, right? Like, okay, I need to have empathy. Now I'm going to go in and turn on my empathy ear or whatever, right? Whereas it's really taking it to that next level of focus on deepening understanding, having active listening are the real skills to build that can lead to deepening empathy and really building empathy muscle. Right.
Yeah. And I think a sort of a tangential to that is, if you have a employee that may not be empathetic, maybe they don't understand. Yeah. Maybe they're crazy, but maybe they don't understand the impact of their work. And so I think that's an approach to take with your staff to help build empathy, just to build understanding.
Maybe to close out, I mean, one of the areas I've been trying to practice myself lately or embrace is the concept of vulnerability, right? So if you think about authors like Brené Brown, has written many books on vulnerability. I think Dare to Lead is the latest book that she has that talks about, you know, as a leader, being vulnerable, right?
Yeah.
And I think that kind of seems to tie to the concept of, you know, being willing to understand or take time to understand, because as a leader, you know, either you're talking, right? Or you're really listening, and listening builds that understanding. But if you're not talking, it seems like it takes a level of vulnerability to be willing to just listen. And particularly in your experience, just going into that environment seemed to require a high level of being willing to be vulnerable.
I 100% agree with that, and I would actually add to that it's probably easier to be empathetic than it is to be vulnerable. That's a skill set. That's something that it takes a person that's very confident, and it takes a special person to be vulnerable. But I think you hit it on the head that's when you really learn. When you humble yourself to be open to new information, and you're ready to admit that a lot of your assumptions and things that you thought in the past may not be correct or completely wrong, and you're open to having others teach you with their experiences. If you can do that, you're going to be successful in a customer experience role.
It's really powerful. I think vulnerability could be a whole, you know, three-set podcast, right? Three series. Just on that. And it's, you know, it does. I by no stretch do I feel like I've gotten to a place where I feel like, you know, hey, I can be very vulnerable and, you know, it's a natural thing. I think I have to now consciously think, okay, do I want to be vulnerable in this situation? Right. And try to practice, find those opportunities to practice. But definitely that's good feedback for our listeners. You know, really those two things should go hand in hand as you're trying to build your leadership around design thinking and becoming a better CX leader. So with that, just really want to thank you, Shane, for coming on, being a part of the Fast Forward Radio family. And before we wrap up, just one question for you. If we could grant you any superpower, what would that superpower be? If we could give you one superpower?
Wow. I assume we're talking about professionally, right?
No. Like this is what we want type of superpower, right? Like superhero superpowers, right?
You know, probably time travel. I would, if I could travel in time, I would never be here. I would, I'd spend some time in the 80s. I'd spend some time 80s. In the 90s.
1980s, you go back to the 1980s.
Yeah, I probably just started in
1980s. I was in the 80s. I don't think there's anything I would go back to. That was my...
I don't know. I remember seeing Michael Jackson on Motown. Oh, okay. I think I practiced the moonwalk for
until 83. Let's see your moonwalk skills here.
Yeah, I left those in the 80s. Yeah, I think time travel. I'd do a lot of vacationing in different eras of human history. That'd be really cool.
Hanging out. Thank you. That's very cool. I can see that. Time travel. I think I would go for that. Not back to the 80s, but but so thank you, Shane. This has been super helpful. I know our audience is going to get a lot of value out of this. We definitely will have you back on to talk about some of the other areas that you're focused on. So thank you very much.
Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you heard, please take time to subscribe to the Fast Forward Radio podcast. We're on all of the major streaming platforms, including iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher.